Good morning. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Let the record show it's 9:02 on February 26, 2007. Joining us today, we have a full committee. We have Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Dyson, Senator Thomas, Senator Elton, and myself, Senator Stedman. We've got three items on the calendar today. We're going to change the order a little bit to match up with other committee work in the building for the sponsors. First, we're going to take up Senate Bill 49, an act relating to the statehood commemorative license plates. And then we're going to do House Bill 18, amending the powers of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education regarding the WAMI Medical School Program. And then we're going to take up HB 120, extending the Council on Domestic Violence. We're going to start today with Senate Bill 49. We have in the audience Mr. Doug Letch from the sponsor's staff. He's here to introduce the bill. We also have Wayne Bannock, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles, is also online. Is that still correct? He's in Anchorage, correct? He's here to answer questions. I'm going to welcome you, Mr. Letch, to the Senate Finance Committee, and if you could please introduce yourself and who you represent, and go ahead and present the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Letch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens, who's on his way back into Juneau from business outside. Pleased to be before the Senate Finance Committee today to talk to you about Senate Bill 49. It's really straightforward legislation to change the way our license plates are going to look for a couple of years. This relates to the Alaska's 50th anniversary as a state. The Statehood Celebration Commission was established, I believe, in the 23rd legislature, and one of the tasks that they set for themselves was to come up with a commemorative license plate. So in the spirit of celebrating the landmark anniversary, the commission has issued the commemorative license plate. I believe there's a copy of the license plate in the packet for you. This would become the official state license plate for a few years once this gets enacted, starting in January of 08. And basically, the Division of Motor Vehicles will issue this in place of the standard yellow and blue Last Frontier plate for a period of a few years. And that'll be one of the license plate that's available. Dwayne Bannock from the Division of Motor Vehicles is online, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, to answer the more technical questions. This is a SB 49, as recommended or offered by Senator Stevens at the request of the Statehood Celebration Commission, of which he is a member and has been working on for the past few years. It's a letter from Gail Phillips, the chair of that Statehood Celebration Commission, in support of this measure. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and or turn the more technical questions over to Dwayne Bannock.
Thank you, Mr. Leach. Could you maybe elaborate on a couple things? One of them is on the sectional analysis. There was a date I'm referencing 2017 concerning Section 3.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. That's a great question. It was brought to my attention about a half an hour ago by your committee aide. And it's something I'm going to need to get some clarification for you, too. I just noticed that, too, for the first time today. What the 2017 date is, and I don't honestly have an answer for you, and maybe Mr. Bannock does, but I will get you the answer.
Mr. Bannock, can you hear me?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir, I can.
If you could please introduce yourself and elaborate on that last question, if you could.
Good morning, sir. My name is Dwayne Bannock. Today I'm representing the Department of Administration and the Division of Motor Vehicles. I don't have the sectional analysis in front of me. However, I can only speculate that in one of the earlier versions of this bill, there was a program that would run this bill all the way, would run this series of license plates all the way through the year 2017. I can only speculate that that's just a typo or something that wasn't caught in the newest revision, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's our intention, too, is to honor what the division's wish is.
Thank you.
We can fix that.
Do we have any questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Bannock, Charlie Huggins, good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
Question for you on, I was asked this the other day by a person that is a collector of license plates. Can someone call you or write you and say, I'd like to have a collector's edition, since I assume that's what this will end up being, and get one without being an Alaska citizen?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, yes. The short answer is yes. We have a provision that this plate will be made available for people that want to, similar to the sample plate, and we sell those plates for $5 a piece. They're not registered. We sell them one at a time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Is there anybody? Online, we also have Gail Phillips.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, if you could please introduce yourself and who you represent, and give us your thoughts on the subject at hand.
Thank you very much. My name is Gail Phillips, and I'm chairman of the Alaska Statehood Celebration Commission, which was formed a couple of years ago to plan the celebration for Alaska's 50th anniversary. One of the items for celebration is a historic license plate that we want to have out for 2008-2009. We will basically be celebrating all through 2008, culminating on January 3rd, 2009, which is when our 50th anniversary actually falls on. So the license plate will be in effect for those 2 years. We have been working with the Department of Motor Vehicles and with Duane for the last year to design an appropriate commemorative license plate. On the plate itself, the design of the plate itself, you will see the logo of the 50th anniversary celebration. That was designed by Sitka artist Dean Potter, and the license plate incorporates the idea of our 50th anniversary celebration with being a member of the Union of United States. So we think this is a great license plate. We look forward to having it offered to the public, and as Duane said, both use on all vehicles in Alaska, but also a commemorative plate that people can buy. And we appreciate the fact that you are hearing this bill now, and your affirmative vote on this issue would be greatly appreciated.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the design, and is this the final design, and what were the other designs that commission considered?
Yes, this is the final design. We went through a lot of different ideas for the design, and this is the design that, in conjunction with the department, because we have to follow a lot of the specifications that are mandatory in it. This is the final design that the commission selected.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. There's, I guess, been an interest from several people. We're in the hopes of maybe having something with a little bit more pizzazz to it, but we recognize beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, and the regulations imposed by DMV as to what can or cannot be on a license plate.
Great. Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Phillips, I'm not sure if this is the question that should be going to you or whether it should be going to Mr. Bannock. Is this the only license plate that's going to be issued for the next several years? And I guess I have that in the reference that those people that have vanity plates that or specialized plates, especially out there, that may or may not want this design with their specific six-digit name on there or something like that.
I would ask Mr. Bannock to answer that.
Senator Olson, through the chair, if I may. This plate is replacing the standard issue plate. Today, our standard issue plate, we refer to it as the Last Frontier plate, has the Alaska flag in the center of it. This plate will not impact any of our personalized plates or other specialty plates, but rather simply substitute the Last Frontier plate for the statehood celebration plate.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
If I'm hearing you correctly, Mr. Bannock, if I want a plate on there that says G-A-I-L, it's going to come with this background.
It could, Senator. I say it could because we are going to make this plate available to be personalized. Of course, we already have three license plates that are available to be personalized, plus a host of specialty plates that are also able to be personalized.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Have any other questions from the committee members? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question in response to what someone else almost asked. You mean we couldn't have had a bear or a wolf or something on the plate? That was not considered or is not considered eligible for consideration?
Senator, I'll defer that to the committee, if I may, as we worked with them for establishing what the plate would look like, adding just our thoughts and suggestions as to how the plate itself would be formatted.
And through the chair to Senator Thomas, we looked at an awful lot of different ideas. We did a lot of research on the plate itself, and this is what the commission had selected.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no questions from the committee, do we have anybody in the audience that would like to come forward and speak on this issue today? Seeing none, bring it back. Any closing comments? Senator Hoffman, may we have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass out CS for Senate Bill 49, State Affairs, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Version C.
Yeah, version C.
Hearing no objections, we will move this bill forward. Go on to our next item. The next item in front of us will be HB 18. And I believe Mike Palowski is here from Representative Kevin Meyer's office. He's here to introduce the bill. There was also a Senate version, SB 75, that was calendared. HB 120 has met up with the Senate version, and we're going to go forward with the. Should we have an Eddie's? We rearranged the schedule, and I got a little. So there is no Senate version on this one. It's the next one. That was the bills that were supposed to come in the middle of the day, and I moved them back. So I apologize to the committee for going into robot mode and working through the list. If we could have Mr. Palowski introduce the bill and go through it, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mike Palowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Kevin Meyer. The sponsor sends his apologies that he couldn't be here this morning, but thanks to the committee for considering this bill. That Alaska has a physician shortage that is at the edge of crisis, I don't think is anything new to the committee. It's been often talked about both in the media and something the committee and the legislature as a whole has been working on for several years. There was a task force commissioned the Alaska Physician Supply Task Force, and the recommendations of the task force was that Alaska needs to seriously look at both recruiting more physicians and growing our own. House Bill 18 represents a portion of that long-term strategy to solve the physician shortage in Alaska. House Bill 18 doubles the size of the WAMI program. WAMI is Alaska's medical school. It's a partnership between Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho, where each state supports the medical school at the University of Washington based on the amount of students they have attending. For Alaska, this has traditionally been 10. Looking that perhaps as many as one-third of our physicians in this state will be retiring within the next 10 years, House Bill 18 doubles the WAMI program from 10 to at least 20 program participants. Now, the way the WAMI program works is that a student gets accepted to the University of Washington Medical School. There, they pay in-state tuition. They do their first year at the University of Alaska Anchorage and then go on to UW to do the rest of their medical education. After their medical education, they enter residency and then become a full-fledged physician. What House Bill 18 does is double the size and allow a student to perform their residency out of state. The reason behind this, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is that there's really only one residency program in the state of Alaska, and that is limited to general family practice doctors. And as we all know, Alaska needs more physicians than just family practice. And so, since there aren't the slots available for the 20 students, allowing a student to conduct their residency out of state is very important to the program. There was a substantive change in the Senate Special Committee on Education, which allowed interest to accrue during this period while a student is abroad in their residency. The change that's maintained from the current program in House Bill 18 is that while interest can accrue, repayment does not have to start until they return to Alaska to fulfill their obligation or leave their residency program or assorted service. That is essentially the bill, Mr. Chairman. It is a first step in bridging our physician shortage. It is a long time lead step. Passing the WAMI program today means we probably wouldn't see doctors for at least 7 to 10 years. But based on our retirement projections, that is when we are going to need more and more physicians. And more physicians will mean better access for care for Alaskans and a hopefully lower cost medical system. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Could you, for the record, state what WAMI stands for so people at home understand what we're talking about here?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman. It is Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. It is a medical program, but the WAMI comes from the states that participate in the program.
And the purpose is to?
The purpose is, since Alaska doesn't have its own medical school at the University of Alaska, neither does Montana, Idaho, or Wyoming, they partner with the University of Washington School of Medicine to essentially buy space at the school so that that can be considered Alaska's medical school. And the same for Wyoming, Montana, Idaho.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few days ago, I think Senator Olson was asking Senator Lisa Murkowski on how to get more physicians in Alaska as well. And from what I recalled, it is general practitioners that we need more than anything else. So why can't we bring these doctors back to Alaska and require them to practice general practitioners here in the state of Alaska? Because in the district that I represent, you know, we don't need specialists in different fields out in rural areas of the state. We would rather have general practitioners. I guess that is the first question that I have. And the second one is, for the last 5 years, what is the record or success of having these physicians once they finish their work coming back to the state of Alaska and actually practicing?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, to your first question, I would turn into the statute, and it's the portion of the statute that's actually left out of the bill, and that's B, and that is the part of the statute that talks about how a loan is repaid, and that's the 5-year obligation, 20% per year. Part of that provision that qualifies you for repayment is conducting a residency program in Alaska. So If I left medical school and came back to Alaska to do general family practice residency, I would get credit towards my 100% payback for the 3 years that I'm in residency. And so there's an implicit benefit to students going into the WAMI program to come back and enter the type of thing that you're talking about, which is general family practice. One of the dilemmas, as we talked about the bill through committees, and your questions come up several times, is that determining what a student will do before they enter into both medicine and then into the residency program is an issue, and also that we need both general family practice and specialists across the state. And that's where the committees have come to it before. On your second question, the number that we've heard as to how many students have returned to Alaska, it's well above 80%. And that's, from an evaluation standpoint, the sponsor believes that's a very successful program.
And that, Mr. Chairman, and that percentage is over what time frame? For the last 5 years, 10 years?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I believe it's the last 5-7 years, but I would defer to Suzanne Trick and Dr. Valenzino, who are online, I believe, to testify about the program.
And the other question, I guess, is that how many of these physicians actually stay longer than 10 years?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I defer again to them to discuss that. I think one of the problems we find, though, in putting that data together is that the repayment provisions weren't added until, I believe it's the year 2000. And so keeping track of these students as they came back has been different over the years. It's as we added in, and Diane Behrens from the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education could probably speak to how they track the students.
Well, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that we are doubling the number here, and we are also doubling the amount of financial commitment the state of Alaska is going to put into this program. And I think that we need to know, actually, is this program working, and are we retaining doctors? It's all good and well to say that we do have a shortage and we need to double the program, but if we do not even know the actual success rate on the long-term basis of this program, it seems a little futile.
Okay. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the presentation. I'm going to hopefully not mischaracterize a comment that I've heard, but it was, I heard a comment that the amendment that happened in the previous committee actually could tend to discourage a general practice or a family practice because the amendment could compel people into a specialty that in fact paid more to deal with the loan cost. Is that a fair characterization that I heard, and is it something this committee should be worried about?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I've heard the same characterization. Whether it's a fair one, since the loans get repaid after a student comes back to Alaska, I think there's two ways to look at it. One is, as a student, putting yourself in that position of accumulating a debt burden that could be in the neighborhood of $150,000, $200,000. Knowing that that will be repaid allows me to go into general family practice. Allowing my residency to qualify towards that would encourage me to go into general family practice. The other side of that is that it creates an adequate hook to ensure that that student does come back to Alaska. And I think that's where the arguments come down on both sides of it. And that's purely a policy call. Your characterization's fair for what some people have said about it. The other side have said, well, it will be repaid anyway.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I think it would be, before the bill moves, it would be maybe appropriate to talk to somebody from the University of Alaska about whether or not they see it as a potential problem.
There's no intention of moving this bill today. I forgot to mention that when we started, due to the scramble of the introduction by the chairman, but we'll have that opportunity. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment that I have a handout here that addresses some of the concerns that Senator Hoffman brought up It doesn't exactly have all the information that he is looking for, but it certainly addresses some of the issues as to where the...
Senator Olson, the intent of the chair is to hold this bill, and we'll get that information that you've put together to the committee members after the meeting, if that's okay.
Thanks.
I just would like a little bit of time to take a look at it. But there is, it looks like it has some interest.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then we'll talk about that when we come back with the bill, if that's all right.
Okay. Okay.
Any other comments from the committee? Do we have anybody from the audience that would like to speak to the issue? They can come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Don't go too far now. You could please introduce yourself and who you represent for the committee. And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Rod Beatty. I'm the president and CEO of Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. I'm here to speak on behalf of our 37 member facilities, which include all of the military, state, tribal, and private facilities in the state, with the exception of one. There should be a position paper in the packet, and I won't belabor the contents of that, and know that you'll take a look at that when you have time. But just want to say that that's been reviewed and approved by our board, as far as the comments that I'm making today. And this is their number one priority. Our members work hard to attract physicians to Alaska, spend a lot of time and money to try to get an adequate number here to meet the needs of the citizens. I was a member of the physician task force that took a look at this issue, and we concluded that, looking at the data, we currently have a net gain in Alaska of 38 physicians per year. That's considering retirements, physicians that come and then choose to leave again, and then new physicians coming into the state. To get where we need to be, with over 300 physicians short at the present time, we need to have 59 physicians per year. It's a difference of about 21. We felt very important, this bill was very important, because it is, in our view, a very significant step. If you look at the return rate of the WAMI students, and about half of those returning are Alaska students who went out and came back, and another three or four are from the other four states who were exposed to Alaska during part of their clinical training and chose to come here to practice, that's a pretty healthy return rate. And we think this is one of the most cost-beneficial things that the state could do to help close that gap. This is just one step. There are other things in that task force report that need to be looked at and strategized on how we might move forward, like the physician loan repayment or recruitment piece. And we've made a commitment in previous committee meetings to be a key part in making that happen, so you don't feel like that task force report didn't have follow-up and there wasn't more meat put on the bones, if you will, as far as the rest of those recommendations. Timing is important on this bill because of the hope that we can get additional students into this year's class at the University of Washington. So clearly any questions that we could ask that would help in your deliberations, we'd be happy to do that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
I wonder if you can get the information that I'm interested in on longevity, how many physicians have come back in the 10-year that they've stayed in the state of Alaska. Because the district that I represent is quite vast, and in my discussions with Gene Potola of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, I don't even believe that we have received even one physician out in my district that I represent from the program.
Through the chair, Senator.
Senator Olson was out there.
Visiting.
Through the chair, Senator, you're absolutely right. I don't know the numbers. I know that they're available, but I don't have them in front of me today. But your area is particularly stressed as far as having enough physicians to meet the needs of people in the area. When I talked to the Yukon-Kuskokwim physicians out there, particularly the physician in charge, several times last year. On any given day, they needed 21, 22 physicians to cover all the clinics and to meet all the patients. And they had only 11 or 12 that were actually employed by the organization, and the rest were travelers that they were bringing in, paying for two-year licenses, and they would stay for, you know, 2-3 weeks and leave, and then you get another physician in to take their place, which is not good for continuity of care for patients. So your concerns clearly shown by the numbers, and what I did here in testimony last week on this bill was that rural representation in the WAMI program is very strong, and they're coming with very good, you know, preparation and ability and compete for these placements quite well. And I think there's people online that could probably address that in more detail, sir.
Thank you. And the other question that I have is, has your office worked with the University of Washington, and can they accommodate the increase that is contemplated in this legislation?
Through the Chair, Senator, there is a commitment from the University of Washington to accommodate these 10 additional slots. The concern they have is to accomplish this by early March, because they're already going through the selection process for the current medical school class, and they want to get notice out to the next 10, and they have a healthy group that they can select from. The candidates are very well qualified, and they can pull that off if they get early enough notice to be able to do that this year.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, let me make sure that Senator Hoffman knows that I wasn't part of the WAMI program. So, but the question I have, Mr. Beatty, is that you were on the task force for the recommendation. I think that a lot of this bill is embodied within this bill. And I thought it better to go and ask you rather than the sponsors how you came up with a number of 20. If we're really looking at a shortage of the magnitude that you're talking about, why not consider 25 or 30? I guess that's my main question right now.
Through the chair, Senator, what we were looking at was trying to get our physician capacity to where it needed to be by the year 2025. Recognizing we couldn't solve this problem overnight, we didn't want to lose ground, we wanted to gain ground over the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And so when we ran the numbers to figure out where we ought to be in 2025, and then took that out over the next, that's a little less than 20 years, it came out to be a net gain of 21 per year that we needed to be able to make that happen. This doesn't deal with the first 7 years, obviously, because this doesn't help until you get those first graduates out. And so the near term is still an issue, and the recruitment and the bonus stuff is certainly a good solution there. But we think that this is really a good strategy, and we don't think it's realistic to think in terms of getting 30 or 40 physicians in Alaska over the next, you know, 5-10 years. There's just too much competition nationally, and just trying to pull that off, we didn't think it was realistic. So we want to put a realistic goal on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we were looking at teacher shortage in rural Alaska, the many other factors came into play: housing, the schools, condition of the schools, and many other issues and areas. And I was wondering, has your commission looked at other factors that can be improved besides the recruitment, housing, and looking at improving many of the facilities that exist and the conditions that the physicians have to work in, because many times that is just as important to the retention of physicians as is getting them educated.
Through the chair, Senator, we did look at that. Physician practice environment, and that's what most of that would fall under, was one of the things that we felt needed to be addressed, and that we needed to find ways to make it more amenable for a physician to choose Alaska as a place to practice. And of course, the further you get away from the urban areas, the more concerns they're going to have about family and other living conditions. And so that is definitely one of the things that needs to be followed up on, and one that we need to spend some time to try to address. But again, the WAMI one made more sense to us because we're talking about Alaskans coming back to Alaska. They know the state, they love the state, or they wouldn't be living here. And we think that the issues around that are going to be less than trying to bring somebody in from another state.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rod, thanks for helping on this and for the work you do. Physician friends of mine who have practiced in rural communities say that there's some professional trade-offs, but being a part of a small clinic gives them the opportunity to practice over a wide range of medical issues that they often wouldn't get in a large hospital. Would you comment about the professional development that happens in a small clinic as opposed to a major metropolitan hospital, and how is there any way we can make that more attractive for doctors in small practices?
Through the chair, Senator, that's a challenge. And there are those who like the broader set of medical conditions that present, and you know, the challenge it presents to them to work with those patients. They clearly need help so that they don't feel like they're isolated and there isn't any professional support that they can have in order to deal with patients that have problems that they may not be totally comfortable dealing with. One of the things you did last year was provide $1 million to us to join with some other funds we had to create a teleradiology system for rural communities to the hospitals and clinics that are in the areas not served by the tribal system. That has been developed. It's already being deployed. And the response from physicians and others in those communities is really very positive in terms of how it's going to help them do their job and connect to people by sending the films and being online with even conferencing ability to know that they're making the right decisions about whether to treat locally or move somebody out to another location where specialists are available. So we have to do more in the area of the practice environment to make a physician feel comfortable being in those areas, particularly if there's only one or two of them, and they don't have a lot of support readily at hand in order to make those judgments.
If I may follow up. Yes. Yeah, that's a great answer, a little off the point of what I was getting at. That helps the doctor on the downside,
right.
But I'm thinking, are there positive things about that environment that would be attractive to a doctor that we might be able to enhance, or are there way, or can we do more to get them to advance training and be able to learn more, and so that their professional development is not arrested by taking a position in a rural community?
Through the chair, Senator, I think that's one I don't particularly have as much information on. My anecdotal information is that the lifestyle in those areas, the size of the communities, the feel of the communities, the lack of managed care, they have to cope with that, which most physicians deal with in other states, all presents on the positive side of why they would pick a rural area to practice in. But I think there's probably others on the line who could more specifically address that.
I don't choose to pursue that anymore at this time, but thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Chairman Stedman. Is Alaska unusual in comparison to other more rural states, or do other states that are similarly situated demographically have the same problems with recruitment and retention of doctors in rural areas?
Through the chair, Senator, we're not unusual in that we are looking at most states having a physician shortage right now, and many small states are competing just as vigorously as we are to attract physicians there. We have some additional challenges, I think, that other states don't have, just in terms of living in Alaska. The difficulty of managing a patient population in this size state isn't as efficient as it would be in bigger settings. But no, other states are experiencing similar problems. And Wyoming, for example, is currently expanding their number of slots in the WAMI program in order to beef up their own ability to hire from Wyoming and have students from Wyoming actually in the School of Medicine at the University of Washington. So we're not alone, but we have to be really aggressive to keep up with what the other states are doing.
Are there some things that can be done other than just increase the number and hope for the best? Are there some things that we're looking forward to do that supplement that attitude or that plan?
Through the chair, Senator, there are. And the task force report laid out a number of them. And again, it's the practice environment, so we can keep physicians who are currently practicing staying in Alaska and staying in practice. One of the things that you approved 2 years ago was the tort reform provisions for Alaska, which made a significant drop in the liability they face. And I hear from my administrators around the state that that's been a big factor in terms of being able to attract the physicians that are coming to the state that they're recruiting for. And so the list in the task force report speaks to the loan repayment program, the physician recruitment process, the whole series of practice environment things that we could be doing that we need to flesh out, not abandon, but we need to flesh out and try to figure out how those can help us as well. And there isn't really a strategy at the moment to do that. We've made a commitment, the hospital association, the two physician groups have made a commitment to actually do that work and to pull together those other recommendations and see what next steps can be taken in order to make some of those others happen as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at what the trend is in the recent past as far as who health care providers actually are and who people are seeing, look especially at Medicare and Medicaid and those kind of programs that are out there, at least what I've been seeing is the trend is toward using more and more mid-level people to go ahead and actually put their hands on the patient. I didn't see a lot of emphasis, I guess, being put on that in the task force report related to physician's assistants and advanced nurse practitioners, and maybe you could just kind of give us an idea on what your thoughts were as to why there wasn't more emphasis on that level, especially for those Medicare and Medicaid patients that are in need of some type of provider there to prescribe them medication.
Through the chair, Senator, we did look at that. We were intentionally very narrow in terms of the report to look just at what the physician needs were in the state. But we did note in the report that there is a higher proportion of mid-levels practicing in Alaska than in most states. I think the relationship between mid-levels and physicians in Alaska is much stronger than it is in most states, and they're seen, you know, as working in collaboration much better than in other states, and that we hoped that that would continue and that there would in fact be more mid-levels available to fill some of those gaps, and I think that point is very, very, very important.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification point. The bill says to accommodate at least 20 new program participants, and Senator Olson made the comment about exceeding, you know, the doubling the program. My assumption based on the language, if there are enough applicants and if you so desire, you can go above 20. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator, I think my understanding of that would be you could go above 20 if you provided enough funding to do that. But that for this particular year, we were hoping there would be funding for an additional 10. So that would be at least 20 versus at least 10 in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony.
I have one final question.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
One final question, I guess, on page 2, line 3 and 4. Do you think it would be wise to say that when they return to the state that they engage in professional medical practices in some of the most deprived areas so that we can get services where they're most needed?
Through the chair, Senator, I really don't feel qualified to speak to that. I think that there's some real concerns within the academic setting about imposing that as a condition early on in this process, and I think there's people who could speak to that better than I could available on the phone.
And I'm interested in this, Mr. Chairman, because when we look at rural areas of the state, it seems as though even though we have this requirement and it's new, the services aren't getting out to the areas that are most underserved in the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Any other questions? Okay. From the audience, Leo Bustad has put forth his X on the proper box to testify, so please come forward and introduce yourself and who you represent, and welcome to Senate Finance.
Well, thank you very much. My name is Leo Bustad. I'm a physician in Anchorage. I represent Alaska Physicians and Surgeons, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I've been in practice in Anchorage. This is my 30th year. I'm a cardiologist, and I'm in a group of, essentially, we're the only cardiology practice in Alaska. Now there's a physician, a cardiologist, coming to Fairbanks. So now we're, and he's independent of our group. I also am active with the University of Alaska on the Chancellor's Advisory Board. I was co-chairman of the most recent fundraising campaign for the university, and I've been involved in medical education for several years as a clinical professor at the University of North Carolina. We've had the opportunity for 10 Alaskans to go to a state-supported medical school for 20 years. During that 20 years, we haven't increased the number of people available that can go to a state-supported medical school despite the increased population, the increased need. Every year, there are at least 40 well-qualified students, Alaskans, who are returned down or put on the waiting list for medical school, despite our increasing need for these physicians. We have, our practice has had a search firm engaged for the last 6 years looking for people, and this is an attractive practice in a big city. It's a lot easier for us to recruit Alaskans, and we're recruiting them to a town that has Nordstrom's. It's much easier to recruit somebody to Western Alaska who grew up in Western Alaska and whose grandma lives 300 miles away as opposed to 3,000 miles away. And the WAMI program gives Alaskans the opportunity to go to medical school. It's a successful program, and I would offer that we consider the cost of not funding this, as opposed to saying that $2 million is a lot of money. We now are paying the price for a physician shortage in Anchorage. And I, too, recognize the problem in a rural Alaska. And the WAMI program has had students that come from Western Alaska. And it's going to be a lot easier to recruit those people to come back to Alaska, come back to a Western Alaska, than it is to get somebody from New York City. I think that we as a state have an obligation to our young people to give them an opportunity to go to medical school. And if you look at the success of this program over time, it's one of the few workforce development programs that has been very successful. The dropout rate is near zero. There's a large group every year of well-qualified students who want to become doctors who we say no to, despite, at the end of the pipeline, a large number of jobs that go unfulfilled. And so now the university is the bottleneck. I think that if you look at the cost of the program in terms of students completing the program as opposed to the cost of the students going into the program, it becomes a lot more attractive in terms of workforce development than a lot of other programs, either educational or vocational.
Senator Hoffman,
I could go on forever, but I'd rather answer your questions.
Right, I was watching the clock and I've kind of figured. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do believe that this program is successful, but as Senator Olson stated, he did not go use the WAMI program, so there must be other ways that the available for students that don't enter this program to still get an education and enter the profession.
You eliminate the state-supported schools. And so now you're telling these Alaskans that you have no opportunity to go to a state-supported school, or essentially no opportunity, and now you look at private medical schools. And if we want to recruit them back to Alaska, now they've incurred a huge debt most often, and the opportunities in private schools are limited.
Thank you. Senator Elton, then Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Doctor, for your testimony. I'm curious, what kind of residency programs do we have in the state of Alaska? Do we have them for cardiology, for surgery?
We have a family practice residency at Providence Hospital that trains 12 physicians a year, which in terms of retention, if you define retention as practicing in the state of Alaska, has been very successful. And that's the only self-contained residency program in the state. Other residents rotate through Alaska hospitals in certain situations. I think that the Navy Hospital has some surgeons that come up here. I think that, I'm not sure about psychiatry, cardiology has none. Internal medicine has, unless they have it at the Native Hospital, they have none. We do, however, have the opportunity for third and fourth year medical students, not only from the University of Washington, but from other states to come up and rotate through Alaska. And any exposure to Alaska encourages those people to look at Alaska as a practice opportunity.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Doctor, for the response. It doesn't have to happen here, and it's not in connection with this bill, but it would be interesting. I noticed that Mr. Beatty's still in the audience. It seems to me that given the connection between residency and physicians staying in the state of Alaska, that an additional discussion outside the context of this bill needs to happen about what we can do to encourage residency programs, not just in Anchorage, but in other facilities around the state.
I think that adding 10 students a year is not the total solution. Our practice, there was testimony earlier about the aging of the Alaska physicians. If we enlarge this class by 10 students starting in September, and 9 of those students go into cardiology, in 2017, our practice would be looking at 9 out of those 10 extra students to replace the physicians that will be leaving my practice. So this isn't the complete answer, but I think the cost of doing nothing is very high.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just make a comment that brought to mind something that Senator Hoffman talked about. Certainly there are other ways to go ahead and get a medical license to practice medicine up here, but it's very difficult to come out and go out to essentially even the lower 48. It was certainly a lot easier to have your own homegrown people, because your own people that are there, and I remember there were times where I wouldn't come home for some pretty significant events. So I believe that if we can put it together where you have your students go to school here, you'll have a better outcome, because I wouldn't say the dropout rate, it was almost the flunk out rate because of people that were away from some of their support systems was very high where I went to, higher than I'd like it to see. And so once you get a person that's in their second or third year of medical school and all of a sudden they pull the plug on them because of some type of scholastic deficiency, they've got a fair amount of investment in there, and so we need to make sure that that's protected as well. And you get a better success rate if you have people going up here. But the reason, the question I have for you, Dr. Busted, is that as we look at Alaska's aging population and realize that things like heart disease and those kind of chronic diseases are going to be something that we're going to be addressing, have to be addressing on a more aggressive level, the emphasis this morning has been, and I am not short. And I am not saying that that's not the case in my area, because we do have shortages out in rural Alaska, but we're also going to need more cardiovascular surgeons, more cardiologists, and you've touched on that to a certain degree. What do you see by 2025 that we're going to be, are we going to be able to keep up with those specialties and subspecialties for much needed procedures that we're going to be doing with the population that we're going to be joining here by that time?
We're not keeping up now. And to speculate about the future, I'm a little bit discouraged. I think that our greatest need is not only specialists. I have trouble finding a gastroenterologist to find somebody to take care of somebody that has a bleed. And that's in Anchorage. In the whole Providence complex, which is the largest complex in the state, there are two internists. And one of them, who I can get a Medicare patient in, was a WAMI student. Our biggest deficit are primary care physicians, but it's not just primary care physicians. As I mentioned, our practice is going to need people, and we're one of the more successful practices in terms of recruiting people. Especially after specialty, neurology is one. There are no doctors. Rheumatology, no doctors. And so I look ahead in 2025, unless we do something dramatically different, we're going to be in more trouble than we are now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Senator Huggins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Busted, thank you for being here today. My question for you is, would you just comment quickly on tort reform and what potential impact that may have had on keeping physicians?
I guess that I would respond by talking about the situation in the state of Washington that was somewhat similar to Alaska before, as I understand it, before Alaska changed the rules. Spokane has had a net loss of physicians. They've moved out of state into the Idaho Panhandle because of the tort reform. We now, in recruiting people, don't have significant questions or roadblocks because of tort problems. Our significant recruiting problems, by and large, aren't tort. They're wives that don't want to move that far away from family.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
One further question, Mr. Chairman.
One more question, and we're going to move on.
As you see the physician situation and the climate with which we have medical doctors and healthcare provider DOs that are out there, do you see us gravitating toward an HMO system by 2025?
Not really. In part, we're a long ways away. The alternatives are few. The population is small.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I thank you for your testimony and your time. Assistants in the audience. I think that's it, unless there's been any changes. Okay. Do we have any other comments from the committee? Would you, Mr. Pawlowski, come forward into the hot chair? Do you have any final comments on today's?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record again, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. In the interest of time, there were several procedural questions asked by the committee, and we have the University of Washington liaison, Suzanne Trick, and the director of the WAMI program should be online. If you would prefer, I could take those questions to them and have them delivered back in writing to the committee. It's really up to the chairman's wishes.
That would be preferred because we are going to move on to our next item. I recognize that they have a list here and they're prepared to answer questions, but we'll have another opportunity in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll get with the committee aid and work out the question list from the members.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. Take a quick brief at ease. We're going to take up HB 120, extending the Council of Domestic Violence. We have HB 120, which is caught up with the Senate Bill 775, so we're going to work on House Bill 120. I believe we have Representative Fairclough here. If she could please come forward and introduce HB 120. I'd like to welcome you to Senate Finance. I think this is the first time you've been here.
It is. Thank you.
And if you could please proceed with the overview of the bill, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Representative Anna Fairclough. HB 120 is an act that extends the life of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I seek your support in addressing violence throughout the state of Alaska. For the last decade, Alaska has ranked in the top three in our nation for domestic violence and sexual assault. This is a dishonorable distinction that I'd like to see changed. The council is a strategic focus point for our entire state, which is very broad, as you know, and it provides a network of services and responses for those that fall victim to these crimes. With that, it's short, it's simple. We need to have the council. Legislative audit has supported extending the council, and I would look for questions and support from this body also.
Okay. Thank you. The House bill has an extension date of 2014, and the Senate version 75 has an extension date of 2011. I'd like to amend that to the 2011 date, the Senate date. And do you have any issues with that?
I do not, sir.
Senator Ellen, would you like to make us a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee on line 6 of House Bill 120 Finance amend the date from 2014 until 2011 and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing no objections, we'll amend that date to 2011. And do we have any other questions from the committee members? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That, if nothing else, got the fiscal note in line with date in line with the bill. So 2011.
We are striving to, as a committee this year, to work on fiscal notes so we have things to line up like that, and I appreciate you noticing that. Do we have any other questions? Do we have any? Senator Ellen.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
I'd like to see if, in just a minute. Do we have anybody from the audience that would like to speak? Okay, seeing none, I am ready for a motion. Senator Elton, would you please make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move committee substitute for House Bill number 120 Finance as amended from the committee with the attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Hearing and seeing no objections, we'll go ahead and move this bill to the next committee of referral. I would like to thank Rep. Fairclough and for her time today coming before the Senate Finance Committee. We're definitely a warm and fuzzy group over here. We aim to work well with our House members as they come forward.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure.
I just wanted to express my sincere thanks for moving this bill forward quickly. The only thing that I could have added to my testimony earlier was that it is in a ramp down mode for sunset, and so as of March 1st was the date that I was going to, that I was given to try to accomplish this task. So I appreciate your cooperation in securing that.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any additional comments as we conclude today's agenda from the committee members? Seeing none, our next meeting is going to be tomorrow, February 27th at 9 a.m. Senator Hoffman is going to be chairing that meeting. He's going to take up SB 83. For FY07, which in English is the Fast Track Supplemental Appropriations Bill, to continue work on that. Hopefully we'll wrap it up. If not, we'll work on it later. And I'd like to conclude this meeting. The meeting is now adjourned. Thanks everybody for coming.